This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
A busy hour number two coming up. Jay Billis momentarily. Patrick Williams of Florida State. Lars Tiffany running the show for the defending national champs in men's lacrosse at the University of Virginia. That's just this hour alone.
Wow. How about all that, right?
Pretty good.
Yeah, no question. Also, we'll talk about a busy week in basketball. Why not get started with Jay Billis? By the way, going to break, Mr. Billis, just in full disclosure here, we ran some ACC highlights, including some stuff at the old Greensboro Coliseum, and I know it was the old Coliseum because the rim lights at the very top of the Coliseum were on while you were cutting down the net. So just want, you know, just qualify the timeline we were working from on that video.
Yeah, those were the days back when the ACC championship game was played at 1 o'clock
on a Sunday.
Yeah, 1 o'clock on a Sunday, exactly. You could start buying a beer, but then just not in the arena.
That's exactly right.
That's the perfect way to put it, too. As a matter of fact,
so here's Duke Carolina tomorrow night, and sure, the Tar Heels haven't had the kind of year they were hoping for. Duke probably has had the type of year they were hoping for. So, but it's still Duke Carolina, and we had Coach K with us yesterday, and he was phenomenal talking about the series. We see so many of these, Jay, and yet they always deliver. It's amazing how good this is, no matter kind of what deck of cards they're playing with that particular year.
Yeah, Wes, I think it's one of those things where there are times that I think we all have to step back and say, man, what a privilege. You know, like we've lived through both, you know, we're all old enough to say this. We've lived through Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods. And you know, we got to see, you know, Magic and Kareem and now LeBron and we've seen Kobe and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But the Duke Carolina thing is different, I think. It's even elevated above any other rivalry in any sport that I can think of. And I would ask you to tell me if I'm wrong here, but when you look at some of the stuff that I know ESPN's putting out, the last 100 games, it is 50-50, and the two teams have scored the identical exact same amount of points. I mean, that's impossible. If you tried to make that up and sell it to somebody, they'd go, come on, that's ridiculous. And they're always, you know, this year's the first time in, I think, 14 years where both teams aren't, or maybe since 2014, I can't remember, but something like that, something crazy where both teams aren't ranked in the top 10 or top 20. And that's, you know, it's almost always the case where they're highly ranked, they're playing for not only ACC bragging rights, but national bragging rights, and the you know, two Hall of Fame coaches, current Hall of Famers, and then you've got all these players that not only, you know, win all these awards in college, but go on to great NBA careers. It's really, really stunning the length and breadth of the rivalry. It's really cool.
Jay, I tell you what else is amazing. I don't know if you know this, but last night the Duke women's program beat North Carolina. That was their 100th meeting, and it's 50-50 as well. I mean, it's kind of bizarre when Duke and North Carolina get together in the hardwood, almost regardless of sport or gender, for that matter. They put on a show. And with that said, let's be honest, on paper, this looks like, well, Duke's a much better team than North Carolina. We had Coach K on yesterday and kind of asked him, when you get scenarios like this where one does look to be better than the other, it's amazing how often the guy that's having the lousy year plays with his hair on fire and pushes it to the limit. Wouldn't surprise me at all tomorrow night if we get that again.
No, Pack, and we've seen that before. And I saw that interview that you guys had with Coach K where he talked about sort of the team versus program thing. And I agree with that. But, it, you know, this one, there's an emotion that goes with this where, you know, how when you have a team that's not, you know, not quite as good, they rise up and play with an incredible amount of motion and challenge the quote unquote better team. But there's more that goes into this one. And you guys have been there. I mean, when you're in the building for a Duke Carolina game, the air is heavier. It's hotter. I don't know what the natural phenomenon is that happens, but it's real and it happens. And I remember just warming up for the game going, we got to be careful here. We could wear ourselves out before the game starts. It's just elevated in a way, and it's hard to explain until you've been through it. and I don't mean just a player, until you've been through the even when you go in as a fan. I don't think any fan can sit there and say, well, that wasn't any different than any other game. Of course it is. And Roy Williams, I think, actually said it, that he doesn't feel like he has to do anything with regard to the Duke game because everybody else does it for him. The motivational stuff and, you know, ready to play stuff, that's done for him. Because there's so many people, and I don't think I've ever come across the kind of rivalry where, like, I think most rivalries have the same amount of meaning to the participants. Like, I don't think Duke Carolina is any bigger to the participants than Xavier Cincinnati or Auburn Alabama. It's just that so many people outside this rivalry that wouldn't count themselves among Duke or Carolina fans or haters, they're interested in it. And that I think shows you the power of it.
Jay, the other part about the game and the series is it births unique, obscure heroes. And it's done it more than once, and it's done it for generations. Tomorrow night, while we know who the stars are, it could be somebody, you know, uniquely different. It could be a role guy off the bench. It could be, you know, somebody else that's barely had an impact in the season to date. I mean, that's the other part about this, is the unique hero that gets born out of a ball game between two rivals like this.
Yeah, exactly. And so could it be Jordan Goldwire comes in and does a defensive job on Cole Anthony? I mean, there are all kinds of guys that can come in and do it. I'm hopeful. I don't expect Brandon Robinson to play. He's been on crutches, but yeah, that's sort of a downer, is that when teams are hurt and Carolina's been banged up, it'll just be interesting for me to see, with a couple games back under his belt, whether Cole Anthony can, you know, the ball's got to move more for Carolina. I mean, I've watched tape of them the last couple games since he's been back, and they're not moving it the same way. And they need to. It tends to stick a little bit, and they tend to stand when Anthony's got the ball because he can make his own play. And so that's got to change, because they've got to be able to pound the ball inside. And I don't think Harrison Brooks has been touching it as much of late, and he needs to, because he's a good low post scorer and one of their best options, if not the best option.
I want to change gears here real quick, because Virginia and Louisville play tomorrow. And Pack and I have talked about that's a pretty big ball game for the Cavaliers. Might equally be as big in some respects for the Cards. Now, sure, they're secure where they are toward the top of the ACC, but Louisville's operating with a nice margin. They can ill afford a sidestep, and Virginia kind of needs, you know, a resume builder in many respects, I guess.
Yeah, Virginia sort of has to have this. I'm not big on must-win games in basketball, because I don't think there are that many of those. But it's a need-to-win game. They can certainly still get to the tournament without it, but they're going to have to do some extraordinary things if they don't get this. And, you know, you guys know, like, the NCAA tournament selection process has become very numbers-oriented. Mm-hmm. And the ACC is not offering the same kind of win value that it normally does this year. And if you don't beat one of Louisville, Florida State, or Duke, the value of these wins on paper is not particularly good. And that's not been true of this league for a long, long time. And so, like, I was just up a Tuesday night at Michigan looking at, I saw Ohio State Michigan play, and was looking at a bunch of numbers and going through it, and I was like, geez, every game in this league is a quad one game.
Yeah.
And it's like the quad one league. And there aren't enough of those in the ACC to make you feel comfortable that when you get a win that usually would be a big deal, it's not as big of a deal. So it makes the, you know, you hate to say this, but it makes the games against the top three teams, you know, Duke, Florida State, and Louisville, even bigger, because they're high value targets. And Virginia's got to get some more of those, or at least one more, and then do well in the ACC tournament. And then Louisville wants to win the league, so that's a game they need to have to win the league.
Jay, we've kind of nicknamed everybody 4 through 15 the glob, and Virginia's on the top of that. But there's some other teams with an opportunity. Can you keep talking about, you got to beat somebody with a number beside their name? Needless to say, there's just not that many opportunities within the league from a conference standpoint. However, it looks like Notre Dame is starting to find it a little bit, and they've got one Sunday at Clemson. which again, the Tigers are on the bottom end of that part, trying to come through that 5-7 club. But what about a team like Notre Dame and teams like Syracuse and NC State as they kind of maybe prime themselves for a run here in February?
I think all those teams, Pac, that you mentioned are good, and I think Notre Dame is a good team. And they're very good offensively. And one of the things, like, John Mooney is an all-ACC player.
Yes, he
is. He should be first-team all-ACC. Mm-hmm. But because his team is not, you know, not winning at the level of the top three, it's going to be hard to crack that. And he should have been on the wooden list and all these other things. He's not getting the attention he deserves. But they're good, and they're capable. And I think they're good enough to be an NCAA tournament team. The problem they've got is their game against Clemson is must. It's not must win. It's can't lose.
Right.
Like, you can't now, because of the strength of the league, you can't lose that game and expect to make a good case in the selection committee process because of the Big Ten and some of these other leagues that they're deeper with teams that have done better in the non-conference, and they have better, you know, sort of better resumes. And I think Syracuse is playing very well, and they're the team now that I think we expected them to be before the season. The problem they have is they're dragging a bad non-conference record behind them, and so they didn't do much in the non-conference, and that's gonna hurt them. And you know, it's odd. The selection committee says, well, we look at their total body of work. Well, if it's total body of work, then what difference does it make? The strength of your non-conference schedule. It's just how many quality games did you win? How many quality games did you play, and how many quality games did you win? And if you guys recall the last year, NC State was number 33 in the net rankings.
Yep.
They were 9-9 in the league, and they didn't make the tournament because they didn't have a quality non-conference schedule. And you're like, that makes no sense if you're saying total body of work. So what the selection committee is really saying is we want to socially engineer scheduling. And if you don't play a quality non-conference schedule, we're going to hurt you for that. And that's what they did to NC State last year. I don't know what they'll do to Syracuse this year, but in years past, Syracuse has been on the outside looking in a similar situation.
Hey, by the way, before we close here, I hearken back to the opening night of this network. And the doc that you were involved in, because it takes me back to a series in 84 where I remember this, the senior game from Matt Daugherty and Carmichael, where the game went to overtime on his jump shot. And then you guys won the next Saturday in the semifinals in Greensboro. That exchange of Duke Carolina in 84, and Jay, I know it's been 100 years ago in some respects, but that series right there was almost like the marker for the start of the new Duke Carolina that maybe had not been rekindled since the 60s in some respects, don't you think?
I do think, actually, yes. Pardon me. I do think that's exactly what happened. And in that, a lot of my teammates point to the game that was played in Greensboro at the ACC tournament when Duke beat Carolina.
Right.
And when Carolina was number one and Michael Jordan and Sam Perkins and Kenny Smith, all those guys. I thought it started in Chapel Hill the week before with the double overtime loss.
Yeah.
Because, we lost that game and it was easy to say, okay, well, there they go again and Carolina's the better program and all that stuff, which it was at the time. But Coach K came in the locker room afterwards and said, we're going to play them again this year, and when we do, we're going to win. And I think we actually believed that, even though we felt like we let a golden opportunity go in Carmichael. But yeah, that I think that's when it started. Mm-hmm. And when I'll tell you guys, when I knew that it changed and it was a completely fair fight and it was totally equal was in 1992. I was a grad assistant at Leitner, Hill, Hurley.
Yeah.
When Duke lost at number one at the Smith Center and Carolina fans stormed the court.
Yep.
We looked back while we were walking in the locker room, going, "They're storming the court! Like, what's going on?" And then we go, this is okay. Things are different now. And that's when I really felt like, okay, this is an even keel fair fight.
Hey, by the way, was Rolling Hills, California and Latham, New York going to square off under the goal there at Carmichael with you and Perkins? Was that going to happen? Were we going to have an undercard deal there?
I hope not, because Sam's arms were so long, I never would have gotten close to him. He had somewhat of a reach advantage, I was one of those hold me back fighters. I didn't want any part of that.
I was going to say, speaking of fair fights, yeah. I think that's just where we draw the line.
Oh, me. Hey, by the way, Bald Men on Campus tonight, Greenberg let the cat out of the bag. Is Double O going to be on the show tonight?
Yeah, Eric Montross. We are only allowing bald people on, so I'm sorry you guys can't join us.
Well,
unless you make some lifestyle changes. Lefty Drizel, even though Maryland left the league, Lefty Drizel is still our patron saint. And so Eric Montross is going to be on, and then we are looking for any other bald ACC or former ACC players to join us on the show as well.
All right. You're the man. Thanks, Jay. Appreciate the time. You're kind to do it ahead of the game. Thanks.
Great being with you guys. Thank you.
All right. You bet.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Well, we've got football in the brain a little bit because there is some football news to address.
Yeah. Patrick Williams, by the way, coming up.
Right. From Florida State. And then Lars Tiffany after that. But I thought there was some interesting news from a football perspective that popped up in the last 24 hours. And again, we didn't spend a whole lot of time on the National Signing Day stuff, even though we did address that yesterday. But Tony Elliott is buying dinner for us the next time we come rolling into Clemson. Good for him.
Yeah. Highest paid assistant offensive coordinator in the country.
1.6, and then he becomes 1.7 for the rest of his days in Tigertown. Hey, you're worth what someone is willing to pay you. Say it all the time. He's an amazing story to begin with.
He is an amazing story.
Again, he's done a great job. And good for him.
Yep, absolutely. And again, his name's been beat around for head coaching positions. And now, if you're going to make him a head coach, you're going to have to make it worth your while.
Right.
And his.
And he enjoys life down there, and they've had an unbelievable success. I mean, it's a win-win proposition for all parties involved.
Mark, can you think of a place that now has coaching continuity like Clemson does in college football?
It's the best college football program in the country. Now, they lost to LSU. I know that. I got that. And tip of the hat to LSU. They had a great year.
Yep.
I'm talking big picture.
Right.
Their stability, their consistency, national championships, college football playoffs, dominating a league, recruiting.
Yep.
The culture, the way they handle themselves. You don't see their kids getting in trouble. The facilities that they built, I mean, it has become now the model program in college football.
Yep. Other news in the ACC. Mixed messages from Blacksburg regarding Justin Fuente and saying the other day that I'm not going to allow what was originally reported was Fuente was not going to allow players who enter the transfer portal to return.
The butt part wasn't mentioned.
Andy Bitter, who covers the Hokies for The Athletic, friend of the show, then said really kind of what he meant was they had let guys come back from the transfer portal a year ago. The staff is going to review it in a case-by-case situation.
Right.
So now, two things. One, Virginia Tech has been a transfer portal machine the last 2 years.
Some good, some bad.
Right. Two, if this is going to continue, Fuente and his staff have to come to some kind of agreement on how they're going to handle this, because the mixed messages in the statement that came out the other day would then coincide with the mixed messages that had happened with their roster. Remember, at one point last year, they had 14, 16 guys in the portal. 8 or 9 of those guys came back. The numbers were kind of like staggering. Now, there were some changes made a year ago. There are a couple guys that went to the transfer portal this year. He said, well, it was reported he said, that anybody who enters the portal will not be allowed to return. Now, is that going to be because of the scholarship? Remember, when you enter the portal, you essentially surrender your athletic aid, your scholarship.
You do, but it doesn't mean you're necessarily gone.
That's correct.
All right, people just assume you see a name in the transfer portal. Well, I mean, where's he going?
Right.
Right. He's gone. Well, I mean, sometimes folks come back. But the problem with all this is players, again, I'm all for student athletes having more power than ever before, which is great. But just because you decide, hey, I'm out of here for whatever reason it may be, does not mean there is a scholarship waiting for you somewhere else.
Right.
That is a real problem.
Right. And I think that we're setting ourselves up, and maybe we can do this later in the spring, a much longer discussion and a much more evolved discussion about the transfer portal, because the numbers on the transfer portal are not all that great. And a lot of people, we found this out last spring, and I think we're hearing some of the same things come down the line this year. A lot of people, regardless of the sport, are walking off on an athletic aid or walking off on a college education in some respect.
And, you know, I know we just got done with National Signing Day Part 2 this week. And then while it's important to recruit well, right, you got to get good players in your program if you're going to turn things around or stay at a certain level, whatever the case may be. The transfer portal's almost become a second recruiting base.
Right.
You can absolutely go out and take care of business and do a really nice job in your recruiting class, but there may be some spots you missed where you said, you know, we thought we had this tight end and ended up going somewhere else and we really need help in the offensive line or whatever it may be. Well, the transfer portal, if a staff is doing a really good job, you have an opportunity to kind of place and plug in where you might have missed out in your original recruiting base. So there's even more pressure now on coaches to be able to get this part right. But for a guy like Justin Fuente, who's probably been burned enough from enough kids that have left, that kind of left him high and dry in some spots, he probably had to put his foot down a little bit and figure this whole thing out.
And this is another news item, obviously, from Blacksburg, because Fuente was somehow involved, interested, slash discussed the Baylor opportunity before they hired Dave Aranda from LSU. Add to that, the other day they had Raheem Blackshear, the running back from Rutgers, has transferred to Blacksburg. And they had 12 players enter the portal from the end of last year. It's not the number it was a year ago, but still a dozen players. That sparked the conversation. And again, I think Andy Bitter summarized it by saying it was a case-by-case scenario.
But you're always looking for stability with your program, with your staff, your players. And we just talked about the Clemson situation.
Right.
And again, I thought Virginia Tech staff and players last year midstream did a tremendous job basically salvaging what looked to be a season that was kind of getting away from them a little bit after Duke had rolled in there and wore them out. And I know they didn't finish right because they wanted to win that bowl game here in Charlotte.
Yep.
But they've got a lot of starters back, and there's huge expectations for Virginia Tech in 2020 to be a serious, serious factor in the ACC Coastal.
Side note news from Boston College yesterday.
This was interesting.
And Jeff Hafley released a statement, and I want to find out more about this, but Boston College is going to open its locker room to the media after every game next season. This is something that is very, very unique in college football. This doesn't happen everywhere. In fact, it's rare now. You know, college football programs tend to bring three or four players to a media area. They talk, they make availability after practices during the week or their regular media session with their coach. College football locker rooms are not open as they used to be, say, what, 25 years ago, Pac?
Correct.
Yeah.
In fact, I remember when I was running the, with Danny Ford, youngster people, and we were doing the Danny Ford television show and the radio network and all that stuff. Hey, we would have carte blanche, man. You come rolling in there, whatever player you needed, go knock that thing out.
Right.
Times have changed drastically. But I did think when I saw this, it's interesting. And I also think BC is in a unique situation. We're in one of the great pro cities in America, right?
Correct.
I mean, you got, you name the sport, and there's probably a world champion walking down the hallway, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're Jeff Hafley and you're with BC, it's a whole new era. You got to do some things to get people kind of tuned in to what you're doing. And I, it may be a bit of a risk, but I think the quality of the kid that they recruit, I think they can handle this.
Right.
And so I think it's a interesting approach to basically garner more attention to, again, anytime you interview a student athlete from BC, you don't have to worry about, you know, something stupid happening or anything along those lines.
Right.
I'm not saying they're immune. Nobody's immune. But I think it's a neat risk, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
I'm with you on this. I think two things come to mind here about this. Number one, your pro market is exactly right. Celtics, Red Sox, Bruins,
name
Patriots,
it.
All those have some degree of open locker room policy. Doesn't mean Tom Brady stands around his locker room, waits to talk to you every week. I mean, right. He has a special particular situation, but most other players, most other professional athletes in that market. So I think BC is actually catering to the media expectation in their particular market. Number two, the aspect here that I find most interesting is, what do we define as media these days? Okay. Traditional newspaper, radio, television? Sure. Blogs? Sure. Others? The others are interesting because it's in this type of environment where, and Jason Baum is somebody who has been incredibly supportive of what we do and incredibly supportive of kind of the network and its launch. I would like to know kind of the discussion. I've been in a room when a locker room was closed. I've been in the discussion when the locker room decision to close was made and the reasons why. I'd like to know what went into the thinking of opening it, because it is a rarity in college football that they're going to have open locker room.
Well, I think everybody's going to do what's in their best interest.
That's it. And I think BC, it fits.
Yeah, I think from a BC perspective, like I said, I think it's a risk that makes sense in the sense that, hey, the quality of the student athlete that's sitting in that locker room, whether it's a win or a loss, and let's maximize our exposure with our kids. So I think it's an interesting approach and more power to them, but it doesn't work for everybody.
No, it doesn't. We've got some stuff from Monday, by the way, just a football note on Monday. We talked about the power of the quarterback position on this show yesterday, just kind of in routine passing of signing day. Mm-hmm. We're going to give you some breakdowns next week on just the quarterbacks who will be in this league next year and maybe some places where you think the starter's obvious. Might not be.
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty good in the quarterback.
Some really interesting quarterback competition. So that's Monday on Packer and Durham. But when we get to the bottom of the hour, we're going to swing back to basketball. Halfway home on a Friday, by the way. How you feeling? You're
about half. About half.
About a five on a ten?
Yeah, it's been that way.
Right?
It's been a lousy week.
That's great.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Busy show. Patrick Williams is going to join us eventually from Florida State.
Yep.
And the Noles, of course, as you mentioned, have Miami tomorrow and then Duke on Monday in another monster game. Lars Tiffany scheduled to join us coming up here in about 10 or 15 minutes as well. The head coach of the men's lacrosse program at the University of Virginia. They are the defending national champs. And we've received a package here from the University of Virginia and told that we need to open that during the Lars interview. So that's coming your way. And then Fred Kiger in about an hour, right? And a lot of folks will go, Fred Kiger, man.
Who's Fred Kiger and why is he on the show?
And you've probably seen him.
Yeah. Well, I know you've seen
him. Had no idea who the guy is, right. But you will by the time we get done with him.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's got great stories and really interesting perspective on the Duke-Carolina rivalry. And certainly with that tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, opportune time to have Fred on.
And I know we've mentioned it a couple times because last night Florida State's women's program knocked off Louisville in a big, big win, making it really interesting at the top. Obviously, Louisville, NC State got the big showdown on the ladies' side next Thursday. But isn't it amazing, though, that Duke North Carolina women are 50-50 in the series and the last 100 games on the men's side, 50-50? It's just bonkers. It's so amazing that Duke and North Carolina be that tight. And it doesn't matter if it's the men's game or the women's game in basketball.
Right. And the thing delivers. It's unbelievable. Jay said it. I mean, think of all the things you see in sports that, you know, they're there, but they're not as good as this.
No.
I don't know what tomorrow night will be. And that's the first thing I want to add is you have no idea what it's going to be. But
hey, Duke may go in there and beat them double digits for all we know. I mean, we don't know how it's going to play out, but I'm just telling you, for every one of those kind of blowout games you get, I'll give you 15 or 20 that are like, oh, my goodness, you got to be kidding me. But nevertheless.
You got a young man from Charlotte. You're excited about having somebody from uptown Charlotte here, aren't you?
I am.
I know. Home boy?
Yeah.
Home guy?
And
he's
doing well. And, of course, he's playing for a team that's red hot and playing great basketball. And with that said, Patrick Williams joins us. Patrick, first of all, congrats, man. Life's good down there in Tallahassee.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, when you decided to go to Florida State, man, growing up in the state of North Carolina, what was it about Leonard Hamilton and the recruiting visits that said you said, you know what, Leonard's my man. I'm going to go down there and play for him. What was that all about?
On my visit, I could just see, you know the love that the coaching staff has for all their players. Our system. Our system is defense first, and I think that really stood out to me. Not to mention that, you know, our coaching staff, we're going to play, 11, 12, 13 deep sometimes. So I feel like that really kind of stood out to me too, because, I mean, just being able to, come in, play as hard as you can for as long as you can, and then be able to rely on somebody else to come in and kind of carry that same load, so.
Patrick, there are a lot of things we got to try and cover with you, but the first is Monday night against Carolina. You come in off the bench, and right away I saw a catch and shoot out of the corner for a three, a rebound, a tough defensive play at one end of the floor. I mean, you provided instant energy for your team coming off the bench. Is that something you're looking to try and do every night? Is it just one of those things where it clicked against the Tar Heels?
It's definitely something that I'm trying to do every night. You know, just coming off the bench and kind of, you know, giving a spark. You know, those first five guys play hard minutes for, you know, that first 5 or 6 minutes. So I just want to come in, you know, just kind of help carry the load, you know, and just do everything I can, you know, just to help the team get the win. You know, those first couple, like 10 minutes in the first half is, you know, astronomical. So you just want to win that first 10 minutes, and then maybe we can hopefully win a game.
Patrick, how often do you guys talk about the ACC race, or is it never discussed?
We don't usually talk about it that much. We just try to focus on, you know, we have a saying, go 1-0 today. So we try to go 1-0 every day, whether that be a game or practice, try to win that practice, win that film session, win that game. And we just try to focus on game by game instead of, you know, just looking at, you know, the bigger picture.
Well, it's interesting because you had 14-9-2 on Monday night against Carolina. And yet I've gone through your line scores. I mean, you've done a variety of different things. One night it might be scoring. One night it might be rebounding. One night it might just be defense. Has the journey for you as a freshman, has it been as varied as it looks from a stat sheet?
I mean, I guess you could say that. You know, as a freshman, you come in, you just want to find your niche, right? You want to come in and just do whatever it takes to win, right? I wanted to be, well, a big reason I came to Florida State was for the culture. So when I got here, I just wanted to fit into the culture. I didn't want to be one of those freshmen who comes in and just, you know, just thinks about offense only or can only do one thing, right? Mm-hmm. So I just come in and try to do everything I can, whether that be rebounding, whether that be getting stops on defense. If I need to score, then the coaches and my teammates will, like, put me in position to score. But I just try to do whatever it takes to win, really.
All right, I want to bring you back home a second. I understand that your mom owns a flower shop here in Charlotte. Is that still correct?
Yes, yes.
You want to give her a free pop here, a little plug?
Oh, come on, yeah. Right. Where's mom's flower shop in Charlotte? Come on, Patrick.
It's Williams Florist. She runs it out of our house, so it's called Williams Florist in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Okay.
It's off of Statesville Avenue.
Got it. Now, you know, we can use a little
We got a basement
sprucing
here.
Up down there. I mean, we got a bunch
over near
of cool
the mall. We can, you know, we need some flowers from Williams Florist. Is that what we need to do? No, you don't laugh now.
Yes.
We're serious now. We got a bunch of sports stuff in here. Every once in a while, we got to get a little floral activity, right, Pac?
Yeah. So what's your mom's name, by the way?
Janie Williams.
All right. So if we walk in there and say, by the way, Patrick sent us, you think she'll give us a little discount?
No, we're not getting any help.
Definitely.
Price. No, definitely. No, we won't. No, we got to go full rate, Patrick. Come on.
We're big tippers though, so we'll balance that whole thing out.
Let's go back to the flower shop here. How long has she had the shop long enough that you had to work for mom?
Oh, yes. She's had it, I want to say 12 years now. So, I've been over the summer. If I need any cash, she's working. If she needs any help, you know, she has busy seasons like Valentine's Day, really busy. Christmas is really busy, and a lot of other holidays are really busy. So on those weekends or those weeks, I just try to help her as much as I can.
All right, so that begs the question: when you start, do you like deliver flowers to people and stuff like that?
Yes.
Okay, what's the hardest flower to deliver? Is it like a dozen roses? There's got to be an arrangement that's like, you know, nearly impossible because you got to keep it balanced. You got to.
It's not the flowers, man. It's the water.
The water in the vase? Is that it?
I would say it's the roses, but not a dozen. It goes up to two dozen or three dozen.
Oh.
I've had to deliver three dozen before. So, yeah, that one's tough because you have to hold the vase, but then you also have to ring the doorbell. or knock on the door, so it gets tough.
You know what you do with that one, don't you? That's the one leg move.
Yeah.
That's when you got one leg and you either go left or right, whatever you got confidence with, and then you just touch it with the Nike with your toe.
Yeah, you
got
to bang it.
Patrick's not buying that story at all.
Three dozen roses would be tough.
All right, listen, I know it's still early in the academic process
for you.
But we always ask every student athlete that comes on the program, what has been the toughest class that you have gone through so far at Florida State?
I would say my anthropology class. I took that over the summer when I first got here. It was pretty tough. But what made it the content wasn't that hard, but what made it hard was that, you know, it was at I want to say 8:30 in the morning, and I had just got here. It was still hot. I was trying to get used to the weather. I'm from Charlotte. It doesn't get that hot in Charlotte. So it was 100 degrees outside, and we had to walk to class. And then when you get to class, your shirt's sweating. So you gotta change your shirt, and after class you gotta walk back home. So, a lot of shirts, going through a lot of shirts.
Yeah, you know, I went through that on just Monday's show alone. By the way, what was your go-to place in Charlotte to eat?
Yeah, where'd you eat, Patrick?
My go-to place, I would say, Smoke Pit.
Smoke Pit
barbecue.
Oh yes. Man!
Okay. All right.
How about Price's Chicken Coop?
Oh yes. I like that. Yeah,
is that where you eat on the hood of the car?
That's when you eat to the hood of the car, man.
All right.
Look at Patrick knows.
Yeah, Patrick knows. Yeah. He's been there. Hey, yeah. Patrick, thanks for the time. Good luck tomorrow against Miami. We appreciate you spending time with us.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
You bet. Patrick Williams, outstanding freshman from Charlotte, playing for Leonard Hamilton in Florida State.
Packer and Durham.
There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy.
Florence Tiffany, we mentioned, had been on with us when we were doing radio only.
Yeah.
On the Central, as we called the show. And we really took a liking to this guy because, number one, he told great stories. And not to mention, he is an interesting story on top of it and has built Virginia lacrosse back to where they are as the defending champs. So,
absolutely.
With that said, we'd now bring on Lars Tiffany because they open up their season tomorrow, and there he is. Coach, first of all, number one, how you doing? And number two, how's the off season been?
Hey, good morning, Mark and Wes. Thanks for having me back in on the show. It's and by the way, I got rid of the tie. I had the tie on, and you know, I got such a hard time from you guys last time I was on the show about that. But and I almost kept it on because well, they're celebrating Gene Corrigan's life this weekend here in Charlottesville.
Oh, awesome.
And what a legend. We've lost a couple legends, actually. Jim Ace Adams passed away recently. He was a UVA lacrosse coach from 1977 to 1992. And then Gene Corrigan, who's had many, many stops in fantastic positions, but he was a head lacrosse coach here at Virginia from 1959 to 1967. And so we'll have a lot of Corrigans and dignitaries and some fabulous people here to celebrate a legend. What a great man. What an inspiration. So optimistic. I love Gene Corrigan, spending time with him. And I was fortunate to have several lunches with Gene and Ace and Dom Starja. There's a photo. Wow. There it is.
Look at that.
That's 50 years of Virginia lacrosse coach, a head coaching experience right there.
So cool.
So what gets discussed at that lunch? And I know Corrigan's not wearing socks. So what happens at that lunch?
Well, to tell you the truth, we probably had that lunch four or five times, and it would be the same stories four or five times.
And the young guy buys. That's how that works.
Yeah, you got stuck with the bill, didn't you?
Exactly, and I love doing it. The invaluable experience to hear the stories about the St. Paul's School and Baltimore and – and how about Jim Ace Adams as a player? Never lost a game in high school or college. Mm. Never lost a lacrosse game. And so I loved reveling those stories. But Gene and Ace were born 4 days apart.
Wow.
And how probably iconic here that their services are a week apart here in Charlottesville. In 91 years later,
great.
That's
man.
That's unbelievable.
No doubt.
Hey, by the way, we got a box here yesterday. On this show.
Another delivery.
And
we got, we opened this up, and is this for us too? These are for us? Pac, you get one, I get one apparently. Are these flags? Is this what's on the field? What are we doing
with
these?
This is, we're going to raise the banner tomorrow just before game time and honor what happened in 2019. So, and the first 500 fans will all receive a replica banner upon entrance into Klöckner Stadium. So we grease our fan. We grease the people who take care of us, and we got to get as much excitement and hype as we can out there. And you guys have been fantastic to us.
Well, we appreciate it very much. That's fun, and thanks for thinking of us. So take us through. You get Loyola tomorrow right here on ACC Network at 2 o'clock. And Loyola, you know, for all the success you've had, this has kind of been a bit of a thorn. The Greyhounds have been tough on the Cavaliers here, Coach.
Absolutely. I mean, we talk about it in sports all the time. Sometimes there's just tougher matchups. The way certain teams play defense and you know, how they approach it. And, you know, part of this is the assistant coach, Mark Van Arsdale. He's a Virginia lacrosse coach for many, many years. So he knows our personnel. He knows our dirty little secrets. But for us, we want to open up the season with a significant opponent, with a big-time game. You see in a lot of sports where that's not the case. It's let's start off with somebody that, you know, as long as we show up and put in a good effort, there's going to be a win. We want to test ourselves right away and find out, have we prepared properly? And if we haven't, a team like Loyola is going to show us right away, and we want to know that early in the season.
So what's going to be different about this year's team than last year's?
Well, certainly, in some ways, it's, again, the philosophy of you win a title, so why change anything? Mm-hmm. But we all know that that's fraught with many, many mistakes, because just like in corporations and business, you even when you're at the top, you have to consistently think about what's next and consistently change. For example, for us, we're going to lose Ryan Conrad and his ability to pick up a lot of ground balls and score goals as he did in heavy doses at the end of last year. We're going to miss some experience on defense. And so what's going to be new for us is how quickly can a youthful defense, we have three freshman defenders playing a lot for us, Scott Bauer, Quentin Matsui, and Jake Giuliani, how quickly can they prove themselves? We're seeing their development in 5 months of preseason. Where are they going to be standing? It took us 2 or 3 years. I'm not that good of a coach. It took me 3 years to really get the defense where we wanted it, and then a lot of men graduated. And so now it's like, you know, we got to reload this. And so where we are defensively is going to be a big question mark. Offensively, we got a lot back, and it's really exciting. And maybe most importantly, assistant coach Sean Kerwin returned. He was out there in the head coaching pool over the summer, and we were really fortunate that we retained his services.
By the way, you always give us some incredibly cool quotes. You got one, maybe a motto, a theme, or something like that for the this year's particular team?
Well, I tell you, we are talking a lot about lock the gates. It's a short phrase. You can't just say it walking on game day, but the idea that in the preseason, in the off season, have you done what's right in terms of your weight room training and in terms of what you're putting in your body and what you're not putting in your body? Have you done everything possible to help yourself and this team be at the best position possible? If we have out-trained and outworked what we thought was possible and we've put ourselves in the best position, then lock the gates. No escape. For 2 hours, the opponent can't escape. But you got to earn that. And so that's sort of an off-season mantra. Lock the gates and building a mindset of really playing championship level lacrosse every day and preparing to be at that level. Lock the gates, because there's it's coming up here tomorrow here at Klöckner. You know, there's a couple hours you can't reach back and go, oh, I wish we worked on that a little more so, or I wish I'd, you know, really trained harder, did a few more sprints. Lock the gates.
It's funny you should say that, Coach, because as soon as Wes leaves every day, that's exactly what goes through my mind.
Yeah, lock the gates. All right. Hey, before we let you go here, you become the first coach or the first person, I think, on Packer and Durham to have a book in their hand as part of the interview. So what's the book in your hand?
Yes. Yes. This is Dom Starza. I hope you will be very happy. Dom Starza, not only the coach who I replaced here at Virginia, who spent 24 years here winning 4 national championships, but my mentor, honestly. Yeah. This is the man who I've leaned on for most of my adult life. He recruited me to play at Brown, so I was I played underneath him. And then as I've become a coach, I've always been leaning on him, calling him, asking him questions. Now what? What do we do? I did it Sunday during Memorial Day weekend.
Wow.
I had never won a semifinal game. So we win Saturday, now it's Sunday. I'm like, all right, Dom, now what? How do we train today? What do I do? And he had sage advice. He said, Lars, you don't need to do anything in practice today for tomorrow's game. Whatever you're doing out there is only satisfying an itch you have. The guys don't need to do a thing. And then I called him a couple days after the national championship. So Dom put together a book. As I've alluded to in other shows, we do what's called Cultural Thursday.
Sure.
We get our men together, and we have these half-hour to 40-minute philosophical conversations about developing mindset and teamwork, making ourselves vulnerable, expressing ourselves. And we do it through books. This is our fifth book, actually. Mm. And yesterday, Ryan Lamb and his family, we have the group, men in groups of four, a first year, second year, third year, and fourth year, and it's a family. Their family led us in chapter 14, The Language of Leadership. Mm. And Dom just has some fantastic insights and his examples and what he's lived through his own life, and he shares with us through this book his experiences at Virginia and Brown. And so it's really wonderful to sit in and experience. And if we ever get you in Charlottesville on a Thursday, I have to have you sit in on a Cultural Thursday. It blows people away. It blows recruits. It blows recruits or parents away.
Yeah.
You know, to see, you know, like Doc Saikin and Michael Krause expressing themselves, making themselves vulnerable. And it's incredible what that's done to unifying this team and making us that much stronger.
Well, I tell you what, it's always great to have you with us. Thanks, as always, for the time. We wish you well tomorrow against Loyola. We're excited it's on ACC Network, and look forward to talking to you again soon, my man.
All right. Thank you, Wes. Thank you, Mark. I love the banner. Love the helmet.
Thank you.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.